If you're looking to maximize your fundraising efforts, DonorBox's online donation platform is designed to help you reach your fundraising goals with ease. Discover the world of simplified, seamless fundraising at DonorBox.org. DonorBox, helping you help others.
Welcome back to the Nonprofit Hub podcast. I'm your host, Megan Spear, and I am joined this week by the famous Tim Kuchariak of Next After. He's Next After's Chief Innovation and Optimization Officer. And normally you would think that that means we're going to talk about fundraising. But we're not. I have Tim with me today, and we are going to dig into everyone's maybe least favorite topic, and that is dealing with the board. We get so many questions about this from our audience in terms of board relations and how do I have a good relationship with my board and what are the pitfalls and all of these things. And so I reached out to Tim, who has so much experience on the subject of being on various boards for the last couple of decades. So I'm excited to hear his wisdom. Tim, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Megan.
Yeah, it's great. So you, outside of your Next After roles, I know there's a number of causes that you are super passionate about and serve on the board of. So from your perspective, we're going to start at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. If you are being recruited to the board, what are some things that you that are important for you to know, right? What are you hoping to get from the organization up front to like start this journey well?
Yeah, great question. You know, what's interesting is I've noticed being involved with various different nonprofit boards is that they function very differently from organization to organization. But I would say that generally speaking, they fall into one of two categories. On one end of the spectrum, the board really just runs the organization. I mean, they are kind of like the de facto management team for the organization. They're involved in lots of like the weedy issues. And then the other side of the spectrum, boards are nothing more than just rubber stampers. It's just a bunch of folks that show up and kind of like, you know, get like one little inch deep as to really what's going on inside the organization. And then they're asked to kind of like bless all these plans. And not having perspective, it usually means that those plans get blessed without a lot of scrutiny. So that's kind of, I guess, the two different categories I would think of. And so if I was going to be involved in joining a new board, I would probably want to understand which of those two ends of the spectrum this organization would fall on. So in order to kind of, you know, learn from that, I would probably request past board meeting minutes and try to like understand what are the topics that the board is being asked to speak into. I would ask questions about meeting cadence. Is this like a four time a year kind of thing? Or is this a, you know, we're going to meet pretty much multiple times a month type of thing? And then I would also want to understand who makes up the board. Like, what are the various different backgrounds and perspectives that they're bringing to the table? Because really, ideally, effective boards have a diversification of people with various different skill sets. And so I'd want to understand what that dynamic looks like.
I really appreciated the one thing that you said up front of the two different types of boards, right? Mm-hmm. Where you do have the rubber stampers versus the actual doers. Is one of those healthier than the other? Is one of them better than the other? Should we really be falling somewhere in the middle?
I would say both ends of those two different sides of the spectrum are extremes, right? Like those are like the probably the worst case scenarios on both ends, right? Where the board is basically just kind of, you know, a figurehead. They're not really having much to do with holding the management team accountable and ultimately like deciding every single meeting, is today the day that we fire the CEO? I mean, that is like the number one job for every single board is to make that decision. And then on the other side of the spectrum, if the board is really functioning as the de facto management team, then, you know, they don't have a strong management team in place and they certainly aren't empowering that management team to go run the organization. So I would say that those are examples of like kind of like the two extremes that you don't want to really be involved in. You want it to be somewhere in the middle where the board is being brought in to serve as the fiduciary. I mean, that is the primary role of the board is to make decisions that are in the best interest of the organization. And sometimes that might mean parting with the key executive, right? And I've been a part of boards where we've had to make that very difficult decision. And then I'd also want to say that a really effective board is also not really running the day-to-day operations. They should not be doing that, right? Their job is to really act as that oversight and really serve as the governance for the organization.
Interesting. So from your perspective, right, if you decide then you've heard all the information, you understand the commitment and the expectations and all of those things, what can executive directors do? And we're going to flip on the other side of like, what can board members do to start well? But what can executive directors do to help board members onboard well? And I ask because I've seen both, you know, having sat on various boards myself, I've seen both of those things, right? Mm-hmm. I've walked into meetings where there's like, this is Megan. She's on the board now. And then we just move forward as if I already have all of the history and all of the things. So I've seen it function kind of on both sides. Mm-hmm. Certainly different approaches.
Yeah.
But from your perspective, what's the most helpful thing that an ED can do?
Well, I think first it would be to kind of help the new board member become acclimated to just like the operations of the organization. They have to understand what is the nature of how this organization functions. Some organizations have like a high level of focus on the financial side of managing the organization. Others are much more involved on kind of like the program management side. And so I would say that, you know, helping that new board member understand really how this board currently functions is really important. Obviously, meeting your fellow board members. So one of the things that we do on one of the boards I'm a part of is that every single board member must meet with the, ideally like over a meal. So it's an extended period of time with each board candidate. This is even before they become part of the board. They can ask questions. And so you'll understand a little bit about what you're getting in terms of a new board member based off the types of questions that they ask. And then you're also able to kind of, you know, speak in and share, here's some of the challenges that we face. I try to be as candid as possible. I want to make sure that the new board member knows exactly what they're walking into the day that they kind of show up for the first meeting. So I think those two things are probably pretty important. You know, the other thing I think an ED can do, and this is probably more on the, once the board member is part of the organization, is really trying to manage the board in a way, meaning like, you know, they have to have a process they take by which they bring the issues that are most critical to the organization that are actually, you know, aligned with what a board should be speaking into to the surface. So, I mean, that sometimes can be very, very difficult, especially if we're dealing with like larger organizations, right? Where they have, you know, lots of different things going on. It's sometimes hard for the ED even to say, these are the most critical and important things that I need my board to speak into.
So let's flip that around, right? You're a board member walking into your first meeting, or even I love the idea of sitting down with people on the board beforehand and getting to ask those questions and really understand, because anytime we can provide the opportunity for that kind of connection, it's going to be better. Mm-hmm. So actually, let's start there. What are some of the questions that somebody should be asking if they have been recruited to be a part of the board? Right. Yeah. What are those things that we want to make sure you have a heads up on?
Yeah. So, I mean, we kind of covered a little bit of this, but describe to me, what is the number one function of the board? Like how, you know, what is the main responsibility for the board? Is it primarily oversight and fiduciary, you know, responsibility, or are they actively involved in working inside the organization? Right. So like those are questions I usually ask right away. You know, getting a sense for what are the different types of meetings you have. So you obviously have your official business meetings and annual meetings, but like, does the board do like an extended strategic planning session once a year? Right. That would be one thing I'd want to understand. Are all the meetings in person, or are they a combination of in person and virtual? And if so, like, how do the agendas for those different type of meetings vary? Because I'm on this one board where we meet twice in person for extended periods of time. So it's usually like a full day, half day. And then we have two meetings that are more virtual, and they're kind of more update meetings in between, like, you know, budget cycles and things like that. So they're just kind of keeping us up to speed as to what's happening inside the organization. You know, so those are, I guess, the things that I usually like to know if I'm trying to go into some type of new role like that. Yeah.
Interesting. So you had mentioned earlier, and I think that this is probably a tough conversation to have, right? When the board decides that they need to make a tough call, we got to part ways with the key executive. We've got to change focus because what we're doing isn't working. Any of those really, those tough calls. Mm-hmm. I know that that's something you've been through with a number of organizations and without, obviously without calling out those organizations, I'd love to hear your experience on how boards can best prepare for those kind of conversations and what that process looks like that comes along with the responsibility of managing a nonprofit that way.
Well, probably the most important thing I learned, especially in the case of actually having to make a change of a key leader, is not kicking that can down the road, but being in a position to act swiftly, right? And that doesn't mean that you're just making knee-jerk reactions. So you have to collect as much information as you possibly can. And this is why having a relationship with the, you know, the management team outside of just the key executive is really, really important. I failed to mention that before, but that's actually another really important thing too, is meeting with each of those different key leaders inside the organization. That's not just the, you know, the executive director or the CEO is really important. Because in that type of situation, you oftentimes have to go and engage with those folks and collect the necessary information you need to be able to make a critical decision like that. So that's a really important thing. But you know, the whole other aspect of moving swiftly. So when we did have to make a change at the one organization in which I serve of the key executive, we then had to go meet with a lot of our major supporters as well and make them aware of this leadership change. And I can tell you that the larger the supporters that we were talking to, the more that they praised us for doing what a board should do, which is making the really tough decisions and moving swiftly. So, you know, that was one of the reasons why we were able to maintain the relationship with those supporters, and they continue to support us today.
That's great. Because I feel like everybody would assume the opposite, right? Like, that could have the potential to damage a lot of relationships.
Well, you hear the stories, Megan, all the time of where boards do not take action, right? They and they sweep things under the rug, and then all of a sudden scandals emerge, and people are saying, "Well, why didn't you do what you were supposed to do? Why did you not address this issue? Why did you just, you know, look the other direction?" Because what you're doing in that case is you're forsaking your number one responsibility as a board member, which is, you know, the fiduciary responsibilities of acting in the best interest of what's important for the organization, not necessarily what's important to maintain the relationships with your key people.
Elevate your fundraising strategy effortlessly with DonorBox, the online fundraising platform that streamlines your operations, amplifies donations, and delivers a user-friendly experience for your supporters. Design captivating donation forms, accept digital wallet payments, seamlessly monitor donations, and automate receipt generation. Joining is a breeze with no setup or monthly fees. From customizable donation forms and 4x faster, ultra-swift checkout to seamless in-person giving with DonorBox Live Kiosk, DonorBox makes giving simple and fast for your donors. Visit DonorBox.org and unlock your full fundraising potential today.
I want to circle back to something that you had said earlier about a board having a diverse group of backgrounds, right? Diverse group of thought and experiences. If somebody today is listening, they're in the ED role or they're, you know, trying to recruit for the board, what are those types of experiences that you would want to make sure are included? Like, who do you want around the table if you're forming your ideal board?
Yeah, I mean, I would start first with like functional disciplines. So you want people that have different backgrounds. So like, you know, a really good board will probably have somebody that's a finance type of person, somebody that maybe has a legal background, depending on your organization, maybe somebody with a technology background. Certainly for any nonprofit organization, somebody with a fundraising background, that's usually why I'm called in to be part of these boards. So you want people that can speak into these various different you know, departments or areas of focus for the organization. So that's number one. But then also like gender and racial and ethnic diversity, right? So like, you know, I've seen a lot of boards that are just a bunch of old white guys, you know, and like those are not effective because they're all oftentimes tennis buddies with the executive director, and they're not necessarily in a position to provide diverse perspective into different issues. And usually those are the ones that are kind of more the rubber stampers in my experience. So I think you want to have, you know, the range of diversity in terms of like thought, discipline, but then also kind of racial and gender and ethnic background.
Yeah, I think that is invaluable advice at this point, because you're right. I think more often than not, boards are still a whole lot of white dudes.
Yep.
So definitely need to start spreading that out a little bit.
Yes.
Okay. So I want to, because of the way that our audience, we know our audience is in a lot of leadership roles, right? So we do have a lot of executive directors. So I want to speak directly to that audience for a second. Mm-hmm. What are some pitfalls when it comes to, you know, as you sit in the ED role and you're watching the board, what are some pitfalls that executive directors can be looking out for to avoid mismanaging that relationship?
Yeah. So one of the things is making sure that your board is asking really good questions, right? If all they're doing is sitting there and watching the show, which is the board meeting, right? And just kind of like counting the seconds to the end, or they're kind of checked off, or if you're in a virtual meeting, they get their camera constantly turned off, chances are you don't have a very engaged board, right? Mm-hmm. Really effective boards ask really, really good questions. And so then, you know, from the executive director standpoint, your job is to help really expose the various different issues that are happening inside the organization so that your board members understand enough to ask really, really, really good questions. And so that means that you need to prepare, right? You need to have, I'm working on this presentation for tomorrow for my C12 group, which is a bunch of 11 other CEOs. We meet together once a month, and every month somebody presents their entire business. So I'm trying to go and say, okay, everything I know about my business, how do I go and just focus this in on these three critical issues that I want to get their advice and counsel on, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you go into every single board meeting and you have that level of focus, it's going to be a very, very effective meeting. And you're going to get some really good engagement from your board. And they're probably going to ask some really good questions. And if you have a diversity of different perspectives and thought, they're going to help you see around some of the corners that you can't see because you don't have the same perspective that they have, right? So I'd say that that's a really key thing, is just kind of preparing and helping create understanding in those meetings.
I've seen and heard from a lot of folks in our audience who are struggling because they have come into an ED role and they've inherited a board who was, you know, maybe either recruited by the previous leader or who was maybe even loyal to that leader before they left. And they're struggling in those relationships because they feel like they don't have the support and the loyalty. In a situation like that, what would your advice to them be?
How do they go about
building that relationship?
That's exactly right. They have to build it, right? So that means it's going to take time and investment, which means you've got to go and probably spend time with each of those various different board members one-on-one, right? Mm-hmm. Outside of just the normal, you know, regular board meetings, and help them get to know you, get to know them, you know, get to understand like what their unique you know, contribution can be to the board, so that you can actually call upon them in a meeting and ask them specifically to speak into something. Because another thing I would say that I notice in, you know, as kind of like a warning sign in board meetings is like there maybe is one or two members of the board that are very, very vocal, and they almost kind of like take over control. And oftentimes, you know, your board is made up of people that are business leaders, right? So these people are used to being in a position where they are the highest person on the
highest voice in the room. Yeah,
exactly. And so, you know, some of those people have very big personalities and very big egos, and they'll have a tendency to completely dominate the meeting. And some of these other people that are quiet may have the key that you need to unlock that next, you know, key decision or breakthrough. Mm. So it's just like any other relationship development. It takes time. You got to put in the time, you got to make the investment, and you need to do that on a one-on-one basis outside of meetings.
Yeah, man, that relationship is so critical, right? Mm-hmm. Because both groups need each other. But I want to go back to something that you just said about maybe the one or two loud voices in the room.
Yes.
That can dominate. And I think we've all seen that, whether it's in a board meeting or just a business meeting, we've all seen that type of behavior. A lot of times I've seen on boards where that can lead then to two factions, right? You've got two sides of the room who have very differing opinions. Mm-hmm. and are trying to almost, you know, we got this click and that click, or however you want to refer to it. Obviously, in a healthy board, that's not going to be the case, right? And everybody's on the same page and we're moving towards the same goal.
Right.
But if you have found yourself in a position almost as if there are now teams, mm-hmm. what's the best way to move through that situation?
Number one, and this is probably the most key relationship, is talk directly with the board chair about this. This is really the board chair's responsibility, is to make sure that that's not taking place. If your board chair is not acting as like the referee, yeah. and actually calling other people out, or even, you know, telling some people to kind of back off, then they're an ineffective chair, right? So I'm actually the chair of, recently been named the chair of one of the boards that I serve on. And so I meet once a month, one-on-one with my CEO. And okay. we get together and we have to have a really good close working relationship so that I can help him manage the board, because he can't do that, or she can't yeah. do that, right? They're not in a position where they're able to go and set, you know, because like the board is your boss. You can't right. tell one of your bosses to, like, you know, shut up, right? So right. I mean, you can. I don't know if it's advisable though, because, like, again, the number one role.
Never seen it go well.
It's not usually like the best, yeah, the best play. So you need to, like, have a good relationship with your board chair and make them aware of, like, some of the concerns you have about some of the board members, so that they can take action, because they can, you know, bring a motion to go and, you know, replace board members. Like, they have that authority and that power, right? So that would be my recommendation.
Yeah, that's great. In your experience, are there other pitfalls that boards run into that we should be, you know, calling out the elephant in the room to try and avoid? Are there other things that you've seen boards do really well that are maybe an idea that somebody could borrow inspiration from?
Well, you know, one of the things, I guess, that I think is really effective in two of the boards that I'm on is that we have a compensation committee that really does, I think, an incredible job of determining what the compensation is for the key executive. And that means, like, going out and getting market data and understanding, as the organization grows or shrinks in size, like, what is actually a reasonable base salary, and then, you know, bonus package, and then working to, you know, refresh that every single year. It's one of my key issues. I just think that people in the nonprofit space do not get paid enough for what they do. Yeah. It's a very frustrating thing. Because, you know, we're trying to solve some of the world's largest problems, and we're trying to do it with as little resources as possible, which is the stupidest thing so you can dumb. Ever possibly do, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm on this kind of campaign to, like, really advance executive compensation inside of nonprofit organizations. And I would say that would be a really great thing. If you don't have one, you know, that would be something to talk to your board chair about mm-hmm. putting together. And if you need resources around that, I'm actually on two of those committees, and it's actually a really cool process. One of the board members that I serve on with, she is like the global head of HR for some big multinational company. And so she's really, really skilled in this area. And there's a lot of really creative stuff that we've developed around bonusing and, like, even like long-term incentive packages and things to really make it a generous offering to the key executive. While at yeah. the same time, you know, keeping in mind that you have donor optics and things like that, you have to be careful of, because, you know,
sure.
that's a reality inside of our space, unfortunately. But yeah, that would be a great one.
Yeah, that's a great one. And I think, man, I can hear executive directors and CEOs all over the country cheering at this point.
They're saying, like, yes and yes, amen, right?
Please.
Pay
that's,
me.
That's the best point I've money. Heard yeah. all day. Give me the money. Because, man, the work is so worth it.
And it's a hard job. It's such a hard job.
It is. So it really hard. Should be definitely compensated appropriately for that yeah. level of skill and expertise. So, yes, I'm sure that you are making friends and fans all over the country at this point with this particular takeaway. So one last question, kind of as we wrap up the conversation here. Mm-hmm. So when it comes time then to step off of the board,
yeah,
either your term is up or, you know, whatever, it's time for you to step down. How do you end well, both from a board member's perspective, and then are there things that an ED can do to help you end well and help, like, close that relationship chapter?
Yeah. I mean, number one, I would say stay engaged with the organization. I mean, like, you know, yes, you understand, like, all the squishy bits of it, like nobody else. But, you know, hopefully you're supporting the organization because you really value what they're doing. not just with your time, but also with your financial resources. So when I've stepped away from boards, I continue in my giving because I want to continue to support the organization and stay engaged. I would say also too is like, as you're, and I'm actually moving, I'm entering my final term for one of the boards I've served on for like the last 7 or 8 years. Next year. And so I'm now actively trying to find my replacement. I know that I represent like the fundraising kind of expertise in the group. And so I've brought two names to the table, to the nomination committee, of people that I think would be great replacements for the skill set that's going to be left when I leave. So, I mean, I think those are two things you can do for sure.
Yeah, I love that. It's like a job, right? You want to leave well without burning bridges. But man, if you can help pass along somebody else, because nobody's going to know your space and your industry like you do. So finding those people, I think that's a great tip. Tim, thank you so much for joining us in this one.
Sure.
You know, board relations can definitely be a sticky subject for a lot of folks, but I think there's some good takeaways here for how to do that well and how to manage those relationships on both sides. So I really appreciate you joining us today and your expertise on the topic.
My pleasure, Megan. Thank you.
Absolutely. Again, my guest has been Tim Kachariak, who is the Chief Innovation and Optimization Officer for NextAfter. This has been another episode of the Nonprofit Hub podcast. We'll see you next time.